Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast with me, Ian Welsh. Today joining me is John Detling, Global Director for Services and Innovation with Qantas. Welcome to the podcast, John.
Thank you, Ian. It's great to join you.
Thinking about some of the challenges for the agriculture sector in general then, what are the main challenges you see for agri-sector companies who want to get to grips with the emissions impacts of their supply chains?
It's a very good question. I think one of the very good things that we've made a lot of progress on is the ability to measure and understand what's happening in agri-food supply chains. I think over the past 5 years or so, there's been huge progress in companies being able to track down a clear understanding of where they need to make progress and where they stand relative to that. The big challenges that are in front of us now are really figuring out how to make the necessary change. And so there's a lot that's needed to be done to really enable companies to push change out to their supply chain, as well as, I think, to be able to measure and track that change as it happens, especially for many of the largest global corporations. There's a need to be able to credibly communicate on the changes that are happening. And so I think there's a lot of improvement needed in how we can track these things to allow that measurement and reporting.
Do you think then the next stage needs to be how to move towards capturing better the value that companies are generating through the innovations and changes in their supply chains?
These kinds of changes need to be something that succeed in the market. It doesn't make sense to try to develop a, so to speak, sustainable product, and then when we get out there, it's a business failure. For this change to really take hold, we have to be able to find ways that these products are successful in the market. And that requires both being able to demonstrate the sustainability value and also the other values that correlate with sustainability, often, you know, better nutrition, other aspects of the product, and getting the consumer to appreciate and recognize that, so that, you know, all the way from the farm to the consumer, that value is kind of flowing and influencing the change. So finding ways to really integrate those aspects with the supply chain, especially in the food sector, there's opportunities to start to think about supply chain as being not just about purchasing. You know, that's where a significant part of the product production happens. And so, you know, identifying the attributes you want to have in the product and understanding the ways in which the production practices influence that can influence quality, taste, nutrition, et cetera. And really seeing that as an integrated part of the product development, I think, is one of the next frontiers.
Well, let's unpack this a little then. What are the stages in dealing with these matters that you find most effective?
There's a few levels at which these kinds of changes can operate. One of them, which we were referring to a moment ago, is kind of at the level of the product concept and identifying what are the products we're bringing to market. How are those developed and how are the raw materials sourced so that we can really focus on those aspects of production and how that ties into marketing the product? At a full supply chain level, there's a really important need to understand the big picture view of where companies can have the most influence, where they might currently be having a negative impact through their supply chain and how they can reverse that and start to have positive impacts. Once you have that mapping, of course, it's also important to figure out exactly what do you do to make a change. And one of the challenges I think we've seen is that those actions aren't always obvious. And sometimes the actions that we think will be effective, we find after the fact we haven't quite made as much progress as we think. And of course, especially in food and agriculture, these production systems are quite complicated. It's not quite an engineering kind of solution. There's sometimes a more soft influence that needs to be applied in the supply chain.
Let's think a little bit more specifically about animal protein production. The UN Food and Agriculture Association and others paint a typically grim picture about animal protein production and the beef sector in particular. Is this always the case? Is it always the case that impacts are unsustainably high? Or is it, as is often the case, a bit more complicated than that?
I would say there are certainly serious challenges in our meat production system. And so there's a lot of issues to be solved. At the same time, I don't think it's good to characterize it as though those systems are always bad or are necessarily bad. I think there's a lot of opportunities to improve and to do things differently. Our group has actually published quite recently a study on which we worked with General Mills and a farm called White Oak Pastures that was suggesting that beef production using regenerative practices could actually be significantly positive on climate outcomes. And I think it's a little bit of a groundbreaking finding, something that might challenge conventional thinking and really point at least to the possibility that if we do conduct these practices in a significantly different way, that these types of production systems can not only not necessarily be bad, but could actually be a potential contributor to a more sustainable food system.
You said that example you mentioned, I saw the report, and it discussed how using these different methods of raising cattle, in fact, meant that there was greater carbon sequestration in the land than otherwise. Moving on from that, though, is the impact of having no cattle at all, is that still going to be, would that not still be lesser than the actual cattle raising?
Yeah, it's an excellent way of framing the question. In the particular case we were looking at here, it's actually the degradation of the land due to many decades of row crop agriculture that's created the opportunity for the beef production to come in through a pasture system and create the carbon sequestration that we're looking at. And so in some ways, it's, you know, the ability for a pasture-based system to make up that deficit due to row crop agriculture. And in that way, it's positioning it, you know, not so much as a animal agriculture versus vegetable agriculture, but actually talking about the way we treat the land and the focus on production practices which keep vegetation on the land, that are driving carbon into the soil, et cetera. Now, of course, it's possible to do those row crop practices in a way that are also protecting the land, improving the quality of the land. This study didn't so much look at the big picture food system. Is it better to be a fully vegetarian versus meat-containing system? But it is suggesting that with meat as a part of the production system, we could do a whole lot better than we're doing today, and that the problems aren't only with animal agriculture, but also there's a lot of other problems with the way we're treating the land through our food production system.
So you're approaching this from the basis that an element of meat production is inevitably still going to be part of the way that we feed ourselves. So if, just starting from that point, how can we then have a meat production system which is less impactful and in fact can be part of an overall rebalancing of agriculture, meaning that agriculture remains as productive as possible?
There's a need for many solutions in this space. And so it doesn't benefit us to try to position those different solutions against each other. The way we're currently operating the industry has a lot of negative impacts, and we're trying to find solutions to address those. This often becomes a very black and white debate where people position different solutions against each other. And I think it's a case where it can be much more of a yes and kind of solution, where we can look for increasing options like choosing vegetarian meals, which we've also published some things on in the recent past. And we can also look at ways in which for the meat that we do consume, we can produce it in a more constructive way. And I don't think those solutions need to be antagonistic. In fact, I think the best options are probably pushing for all those options and also giving consumers the ability to select the approaches that they want in terms of their food supply as well.
At the end of the day, we are still going to inevitably have to move consumers away from consuming as much animal-based protein as they have been, and then essentially find alternatives that are less impactful and involving more vegetable-based foodstuffs. And that's just inevitable, right?
I do believe so, especially if you look at the trends, both in terms of population growth, but also the current trend of protein consumption globally. If you look at those numbers and say, how do we provide that much more protein on the planet? It just doesn't seem like the numbers add up to be a very sustainable picture. And so I do think a big part of this solution has to be, how can we shift a greater part of our diet towards vegetable protein? But then again, importantly, for that animal protein that we continue to consume, how can we produce those animal products in a way where, you know, they're having a significantly less negative impact on the planet? And again, similar to the research that we put out, potentially actually a positive impact on the planet as being a part of that transformation of our land systems from degraded to ones that are much more productive.
One of the interesting possible solutions are the sort of products being produced by the likes of Impossible Foods. Now, you've worked with Impossible Foods. To what extent do you think that the development of consumer-pleasing non-meat proteins are a real game-changer for emissions reduction and in dealing with the other impacts?
Yeah, Impossible Foods is a fascinating company. I really admire their vision and, you know, the ambition with which they chase this idea of really transforming our food system. It is really a game-changer if we can get to the point where the typical meat-eating consumer prefers a product that's based on vegetable protein. I think it's a total transformation in the way at which we approach that problem, and instead of trying to convince people to eat burgers made out of beans or grains or things like that, to really be able to give them a product which they identify in terms of the flavors with what they're craving in terms of animal protein. Do you hear some of the reports on people taste testing things like the Impossible Burger and saying they actually prefer it to a meat product? I think the marketing slogan from Diet Dr. Pepper was that it tastes more like Dr. Pepper than the original Dr. Pepper. And I think that's the, you know, in some ways, the direction Impossible Foods is chasing is, how do we get imitation meat to actually taste more like meat than meat? And I think if you can achieve that, It is indeed something that could really transform the system. And especially when you look at the massive improvement that that product has. And again, we put these metrics together with them and published it a few months ago, huge reductions in carbon footprint, in water use, in, you know, the amount of land used to produce the burger. And if you can scale that across the meat sector, again, it has huge implications.
Sure. And it's interesting that that's part of the marketing for them. While it's actually not, as you might have thought, as so many other vegetarian or vegan foodstuffs are pushed in terms of their health. The Impossible Burger are not promoting the Impossible Burger on the basis of it being a health product. They're pushing it on the basis of it being less impactful and the future of eating meat. And I mean, I think the slogan that it's a meat that tastes more like meat than meat is actually one that's really, really exciting. Well, what other innovations do you think we're going to see down the track?
There's a lot of things happening in this space. In some ways, I start to think that, you know, how the world provides itself with hamburgers might be one of the best indicators in the coming decades of how we're progressing on managing some of the planet's biggest problems. The solutions around producing actual meat products in a more sustainable way is an enormous potential solution. I think there's huge progress and huge insights being gained about how regenerative meat production practices, focusing more on grazing, focusing especially on practices that get more vegetation on the land, get more soil, get more carbon into the soil, potentially a huge game changer, even within what we might think of as the conventional animal-based protein kind of system. The progress, you know, that companies, and not just Impossible Foods, there's others in that space that are producing real viable meat substitute alternatives, you know, that have that potential to be products that the consumer prefers and demands as an alternative to meat is a huge benefit. Some of the other things that are coming in that space are things that bridge the gap or fit in the middle there. There's technologies being developed to produce meat without animals. You could think of that as basically producing a hamburger in a petri dish, so to speak. Of course, it's a little bit more complicated than that. But that idea that we could produce real, what's really meat tissue without the need to raise the full animal has, you know, interesting implications for both animal rights, but also I think for the environment. Those could be products that the technology evolves that are not only more sustainable in terms of resource consumption, but I could see potential there for things like flavor, quality, safety, all of those things to be exceeding what's currently on plates today. I think we're not there yet. It's intriguing to see how these things are evolving so quickly. And then I would also mention that there's also a big variety of products already out there. And there's a lot of things happening in what we might think of as the conventional meat alternative space. We also did some work a few years ago with Morningstar Farms, which is a brand of Kellogg's. And they were doing some really interesting things in their product development, but also in their communication and trying to engage with consumers on making sustainable choices in their meals and their food products. Looking at what some of those higher generations of vegetable-based proteins are doing is also interesting to follow.
But it certainly feels like there's an awful lot happening. And the way that consumers' relationship with their food is changing is also one to watch. But for now, John Detling from Qantas, thank you very much indeed.
Great. Thank you, Ian. Nice to be with you.